So welcome along to this special episode of York Hospital Ball. We're absolutely delighted to once again welcome Matt Oogler, York City's owner, to York Hospital Radio Studios. I think the first time we interviewed Matt was in his first week at the club, and we've kind of made it an annual thing since then, so it's really great to have him. For those who are regular listeners, you'll know that this podcast is a spin-off for York Hospital Radio, a local charity which provides a service for patients in York Hospital. Lots of ways that you can help us. I'll mention those at the end of this podcast. But without further ado, here is our interview, recently recorded with Matthew Oogler. So Matt, as ever, absolute pleasure to have you on Hospital Ball again and to come to Hospital Radio Studios. So much has happened since our last chat just over a year ago. The club feels like a different entity compared to 2 years ago when we first spoke. You ended the last interview talking about how you wanted progress. 96 points, 95 goals, second place compared to 20th place. I mean, that is some progress. I know we didn't get the ending that we wanted, but you must take a lot of pride in that turnaround from a year ago.
Yeah, I think if you offered that to me this time last year, we would have probably bit your hand off for it. So, yeah, massive progress. I think we broke sort of all sorts of records, both, you know, on and off the pitch. So, yeah, really, really, really good year. Ending was a little bit, you know, of a heartbreak, but you know, we can learn from these things and move forward.
Yeah, and we didn't really say it at the time, but there was some pressure on last summer. I was kind of looking back and, you know, you felt that the recruitment was a lot better, but there was some question marks around like Sir Harrison Mayle, mainly from someone up the road, but even the likes of Joe Felix and Ollie Pearce as to whether they would be able to make the step up. So did you really believe in your sort of heart of hearts that they would have as bigger impact as what they did?
I think not to the same extent that they have. I didn't think Ollie would score that many goals in this division. He came in, was unbelievable. Joe was, I think, probably our best player last year and was a revelation, and probably had a bit more conviction over Harrison just because he, you know, done very well for
the Dawkins.
That's the one. Yeah. So I knew that I couldn't gauge the, until, you know, Joe and Ollie, couldn't really gauge the step between National League South and the National League, and clearly they've shown that there's not a massive one.
Just before we discuss the future, I mean, the Oldham game, I think everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong, didn't it? And you went on Radio York, I think, the next day, fronting up, which was, you know, really admirable. But I felt like listening that it was still very raw to you, and you were definitely hurting. How long did it take you to get over that result?
I think, you know, kind of came away from that game. I was kind of sceptical going into it. I thought it was a bad matchup for us. I think, obviously, we're, as the table showed, a far better football team than Oldham over the course of the season. But in that type of situation, I did worry. I think if you look back over the season, you know, whenever we had sort of a big game that meant a lot, the result didn't really go our way. Forest Green away, Barnet away, and then obviously Oldham in the playoffs. So I thought beforehand that it might be an interesting one. Probably took a day or two to just kind of feel a little bit sorry for myself, and then it was kind of like, right, okay, where have we gone wrong and what do we need to address and how can we improve? And I think, you know, I went away and spoke with you know, an analyst that we use and the data company, and it was quite glaring that the weaknesses were probably height, you know, athleticism, experience, and, you know, I think we're probably missing a leader or two out there on that night. Whereas if you look at the Oldham team, it was full of those type of players. So we, you know, very quickly addressed it, went and got Ollie Banks in the building, I think within under a week of that game.
He was in the building for the game.
He was in the building for the game, yeah. Then obviously we've added Ash Palmer, who's been unbelievable in this division and got out of it multiple times. Kitchen obviously got out of it with Oldham. You know, Hiram Boateng, who's had, you know, I don't think he's ever played in this division, but has had promotions in, you know, in the leagues above, and just added that height and physicality as well. So I think we conceded a lot of goals from set pieces last year. But if you look at the personnel that just got mentioned, you probably, you know, you'd like to think that you'd win those duels more often than not.
And of course, in most divisions if in football, if you get 96 points, you celebrate promotion, don't you? Which is so frustrating that we didn't go up. I think you rightly are sort of very pro the free up, as you were with cup replays. But do you feel sort of, and the football community are a bit sort of powerless to these sort of things? And I notice more and more clubs are starting to distance themselves from the National League Cup and stuff like that. Do you feel like, you know, you're almost banging your head against a brick wall with some of these sort of things?
Yeah, I think you know what you're signing up for at the beginning of the year, so... I think we put out a letter after this, you know, season had ended, and I purposely was like, I'm not putting my name on that because I don't think it, you know, it's not the right time. They put it out anyways, and it obviously caused a stir. I do agree with the three up. I think that the National League is, you know, this very much the same standard as League Two. I don't think there's a big drop off. You just see the promoted teams that have gone up, they always do really well. I can't remember one since I've been watching that's gone up and come straight back down. And they, in fact, it's usually the other way where they go up and continue to climb. But it is what it is, and it's what we're dealing with. And, you know, you can keep banging the drum and hope for some change, but whether that happens, I don't know. There's been talk about it for a long time. Unless someone steps in and makes that decision for clubs, I don't think clubs are going to vote for it. So yeah, we are where we are.
I suppose we'll just have to go and win it then.
Well, I think this is it. This is the hardest part is this division. This division's a bottleneck, really. So yeah, like you said, you get 96 points in any other league, you either win it or you're definitely promoted. But Barnet had a fantastic year, and we fell short. And you know, the playoff system I don't really like either. Like, I don't understand why it's not two legs. I think that's, you know, a bit unfair. You go the whole season and then it's a one-off game, and you've seen in any game of football, a smaller team can beat a bigger team, a poorer team can beat a better team. So it is what it is. We know what we're signing up for, and we just got to, you know, hopefully go and do it this year.
Yeah. And was there you mentioned there about recruitment. Was there a plan A and plan B for recruitment, depending on the division that we'd be in? I mean, I noticed like, someone like Ollie Banks was there at that game. Was he coming in regardless of what division we were going to be in?
Yeah, I think we don't have a plan A or a plan B. I think that would probably be more the other end of the table. Maybe last year when we were having a chat, if you were to go into regional football, there'd be a plan A, a plan B. We, with our recruitment, always recruit for not just 1 year. So we believe that all the players brought in, if we were to go up, could do a job in the division above, and there's a lot of them that could probably do it, you know, in the division above that as well.
And I think you mentioned to me before about, you know, you really wanted players to sort of come up through the leagues with you, which is what you kind of alluding to there. But now I feel like you've got to shift more to sort of more experienced players who are proven winners, but some are closer to the end of the career than the start. Do you still feel they are sort of coming through the same?
I think it's getting the blend. I think last year, if you actually look at the starting lineup that played against Oldham, a lot of them, that was their first proper full season of you know, football. Like, obviously they'd been at clubs, but you know, you look at like an Alex Hunt or someone like that, he'd ever played that many games in a season in professional football anyways. Obviously it was Pierce's first season in professional football, Felix's, Malachi Fagan-Walcott never put in that many games in a season. Yeah, it was just about, it's about getting that blend. I think you've got fantastic players there, all of those ones who have named, who will learn from that experience and be stronger for it. But I do think that, yeah, there is a shift a little bit towards, you know, getting that
proven winner.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes you're going to play these games like that are going to just be fights. You know, I think on our day, we play anyone off the pitch in the division. We did last year. I think, you know, I went and, you know, spent time with Green Brennan after the season ended, and we chatted about that game, you know, away. And he said he had to change it all for us, because if we tried to play football against us, like, I think, you know, it might be arrogant, but I think we play anyone off the park, probably in the division above as well. But teams found a solution to play against us, which was, let's get aggressive and bully them a little bit, and it worked. So we had to find an antidote to that, and I think we have.
And does recruiting players follow the same principles as a year ago? Because I remember you saying about getting the right characters in the building. It wasn't always necessarily about how good they were as players, but you wanted the right sort of people.
Yeah, 100%. I think you get references. I had you know, long chats with Ollie Banks, had really long chat with Ash Palmer. The managers had, you know, chats with different players too. And yeah, we have to be sure that I think that first year we didn't do any of that. And you saw some of the characters come in and they're not here for anything other than a payday. So I think it's a mixture of, you know, getting character references right, but also incentivizing contracts more so than just sort of giving a lump wage each week.
Yeah. And in terms of recruitment, we've had, like I said, David Stockdale, I believe Tony McMahon's now left for club, Matthew Lever. Is that you just sort of trying to find the right formula for recruitment going forward?
I think, well, you know, was sort of fresh into it and didn't understand a lot. I think, you know, you take people like them and you learn a little bit from them and maybe, you know, it's not quite the right fit. I think we got to the point where, you know, between myself and Adam and, you know, the analysts and our data people, we know what we want and we don't really need someone like that. I think we have the formula and, yeah, I think it's in a good place.
And how does signing a player work like now? So who identifies a player? Who does the contracts? Is it the same for every player? Is it different for different people?
To be fair, I think the identifying of players is usually not the coaching staff. It's more of the you know, like the analysts and data people, and then they get put to the coaching staff, and they'll either say yes or no. And then we go from there. So then obviously it would be myself to talk to an agent or the player themselves and sort of do that groundwork. And then once we're happy with everything, it's you know, it's a yes from me, it's a yes from the recruitment guys, it's a yes from the manager, then it's, you know, we're good to go. And that's how it works.
Yeah. And you mentioned there about, you know, not needing the likes of, you know, Tony McMahon there, but you did also mention that you went and spoke with Dean Brennan. So you obviously clearly like to learn off other people. What was it that you learned off? Was it Dean and Barnett's owner as well? Is that right?
Yeah, I spent the day with Dean and his coaching staff, not with the owner. And yeah, it's just, obviously he was successful last year, wasn't he? He's kind of been successful everywhere he's gone. So he has his style, you know, other people have their style, and it's just sort of taking bits off of each of them and learning and creating a good relationship as well. Like I could call Dean up and go, what do you think of this player? And he'll give me his opinion. I might not agree with it, but it's nice to have and, you know, start building that network where you can do that.
Yeah. And I imagine football's probably full of people that you trust and full of people you don't trust. It's nice to have people that you feel like you can trust.
Not many that you do trust. I think when you find like good people, it's quite rare in, I think, this industry. But when you do, I think you stick quite closely together, and you know, we help them, they help us, and it's a nice relationship that we have.
And I believe York City paid over £100,000 in agent fees last year, I think second to Forest Green. Is that something that's inevitable when you're trying to get your top targets in? I think I've asked you this before, but is there a bit of a kind of York City tax with certain players and certain agents?
Well, I think you also have the hangover from the year before where, you know, you've given out sort of probably silly contracts. And every year, you know, that goes into the agent's fee. You know, they take between 5% and whatever percent they've agreed. But yeah, it is a double-edged sword, because obviously if you're wanting to get a better player, he's probably going to be on a better deal, and therefore 5% of that is more valuable than 5% of a player that's maybe not so good.
Yeah. And recruitment is obviously crucial, but arguably, when you've already got some fantastic players in the building, retention is just as important, isn't it? So I'm sure the likes of Ollie Pearce, you know, he's a goal scorer. Many football teams need goal scorers. He'll have had plenty of admirers, and historically, York would have been picked off with players like him. How have you had much interest for players in this summer? Are we in a strong position to keep players?
Yeah, no, there's been obviously people sniffing around Ollie, and there's been bids made and things like that. No, we're not selling club. I think obviously if someone wanted to give us something extremely silly, where we felt we could use that to put obviously back into the club and do something, and also replace the goals that we'd probably be missing, then maybe, but we don't have to do that. Ollie's not in the last year of his contract. I spoke to Ollie on the phone you know, said, asked him what he wanted to do. Because I think that's important too, is you don't want to stand in someone's way either. But I think Ollie loves the club, loves the city, obviously loves the manager, and there was no issue. It was kind of, I spoke to him, said, what do you want to do? He said, you know, I want to stay. And that was the end of it, really.
Right. Was that quite early on in the summer, was it?
Yeah, pretty early. I think within, you know, the first couple of weeks after it ended, you know, there was quite a few people sort of hovering around. But like I said, we don't need to sell. And to replace someone like Ollie would be really difficult. So, yeah, he's a York player, and he's going to be a York player for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and do you feel like the same for everyone in the squad then? Everyone's almost got a price, but only if it works right for York City and you don't have to do anything you don't want to do, sort of thing.
Everyone has a price. I think in a lot of, that's at any football club. It's just about having a strategy for that. So, you know, if someone had come in and, you know, gone, here's X amount for whoever, you go, all right, well, what does the team look like with him not in it? Can we use a chunk of that to replace him with maybe a better player? And then, you know, can we use the rest of it to maybe go in, we're weak on, I don't know, the left wing or the right wing or centre middle, whatever it is. Can we also improve there? So when the dust all settles from that deal, you actually think you're a better football team.
Yeah. And one player that you did allow to move on was Dipo Akinyemi, and I know you've got a huge amount of respect for him. What impact did Dipo have on this football club for you?
Massive. I was still a little bit sad about it, to be honest with you. I had a good chat with him after it was all done. I think, you know, I put something out there, and it was, you know, that first year we were making so many mistakes, and we were in a real bad place. We were really in trouble, and it was toxic, to be fair. You know, it wasn't kind of the joy of last season, and I think a lot of people might have forgotten that and got wrapped up in how well we did do last year. But none of that would have been possible, because I genuinely think without, you know, Dipo and probably Marvin Armstrong when he came in, I think those, you know, obviously the rest of the team played their part too, but I think those two really took the club by the scruff of the neck and sort of pulled us over that line. And just as a man, I just have a lot of respect for Dipo. I think he's, you know, last year there was, you know, some good offers for him, and he didn't complain when they were turned down. January again, you know, didn't quite work out. And he never kicked up a fuss, never made a problem. Always, you know, said they love the club, and you know, he does. I've got massive respect for him. He's a top, top player, and I really, really hope that he goes to Derry and absolutely tears it up, because, you know, I think he's a special one.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know Adam Hinshelwood was away watching his son at the Euros this summer. Did he leave you a sort of set of players to sign in? Is he more of a coach? How was it? I know we're still into recruitment here, but how was his? Where's his role in all this?
In terms of
recruitment and things like that.
I mean, if Adam has a player that he likes, he can put the player forward, and he gets put through the process, and, you know, I could turn around to him and go back to him and go, yeah, it's not really for us. Or equally, we could go, look, we really like this guy. What do you think, Adam? Go away. Here's his clips. Here's his data. Have a watch. And if he comes back and goes, nah, it's not really for me, then we don't do it. So I don't think Adam, if you're if you're in Adam's position, your main focus is that squad of players that you have and the next match and training and all that. You don't really have the time to know what's going on in the National League South, know what's going on, you know, in the National League North, know what's going on in League Two, know, you know, what players are available, what aren't available. I think if you put all of that on someone's plate, it's probably too much. So I think that way of doing it is probably outdated. I know a lot of people think that that's how it should be done. I disagree massively. I think if you have one point of failure and, you know, you leave all your recruitment and stuff to one person and that person ends up leaving, your foundations aren't very strong. I think Adam's been unbelievable at putting what the ownership group wants into the football club, which is that style of play, and being really, we wouldn't sign him a player that didn't fit that style of play. But yeah, like on recruitment, it's very much like a collaborative thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I see this a lot where people go, is this person signing? It's like, no, it's not that person. It's a York City signing.
Yeah.
And that some will work out, some won't work out. But I think there's no one where the manager goes, no, I don't want him, and we sign him. That doesn't happen.
Yeah. And that's what people want to hear, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it sort of almost depends what generation you're from as well, because the generation I grew up in, the manager did literally do all of that.
I remember, growing up, obviously, as an Arsenal, you had Wenger doing everything, you had Ferguson at Man United doing everything. But I think it's outdated. I think, you know, you look at how, you know, I know we're talking about top clubs here, but you look at the likes of Brighton, like, there's no way when, like, Caicedo or those guys come, or at Bournemouth, Kirkes, and there's no way when they come in that the manager has a clue who they are. But the method and, you know, the way that they recruit is being tried and tested, that they believe in it, and they get it right more often than they get it wrong.
And the manager will be part of that process, but he won't be the one who's...
I don't know. I think at those bigger clubs, I don't even know if they are involved, but 100%...
You'd be surprised, wouldn't you, based on what you've said there?
I think 100% at our club, you know, there's people doing a lot of work off the pitch to find these players, like, you know, your Ben Brookses and stuff like that. And then putting it all together, then you know, I'll speak to Adam and Gary and go, look, we really like this guy, what do you think? And they'll go away, and, you know, a day or two later, they'll go, yeah, I really, really like him, can we get it done? And then that's when we go to work to go, okay, what does it look like financially?
And there was obviously some confusion and rumours, etc., around his future and his contract situation. You know, it's entirely up to you whether you want to go into that or not. But ultimately, my question is kind of, are you confident everyone's singing from the same hymn sheet going into the new season?
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Adam's like a, you know, just like a player, isn't it? That if you're doing really, really well, it's like Ollie, you know, people are going to want to come in and get him, and that's fair. Adam's done an unbelievable job and at the club, and it's only right to be linked to other clubs, and other clubs, you know, I'm sure throughout the season will be linked to him again. But as far as I'm aware and concerned, is he's York's manager and he wants to be here and wants to move forward. And I think he sees the potential of the club and wants to be a part of it. So I think we're all very much on the same page.
Very good. And last question on recruitment. I feel like the club has now got a clear identity on sort of players and the style of play, and people might call it, you know, DNA or whatever. Is that something that's important to you as an owner?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the way that we play is, as long as we're around, is going to be the way that we're going to play. I think for a variety of reasons. Obviously, there might be a few tweaks here and there, but it's never going to drastically alter from the style that we're at. One, I don't want to watch what we watched last year. That was not fun.
You mean the year before?
Yeah, sorry, the year before. It's all blends into one. And two, I think if you keep changing your style, your squad has to be changed constantly. You know, the profile of manager that you're looking at, you can look at anyone, but, you know, as for example, like, you know, the Tamworth manager, he's done a fantastic job at Tamworth, but would he fit our profile? No chance, because that's not how we play. So I think it's just about, and again, recruitment as well, like, if, you know, you're spending all year looking at players that can fit into our system, and then, you know, I turn around to them and go, well, actually, just to let you know, Adam's gone now, and we're going to bring in Sean Dyche, and we're going to play this type of football, a lot of their work becomes redundant. So I think it's about having a DNA, but also allows you to sort of have that continuity.
Yeah. And one of the things that didn't always help that sort of style of play was the pitch. I think last season, lots of games being played on the surface. I mean, I understand it's a community stadium and not solely belonging to York City, but was that a frustration for you? And do you have conversations with the SMC about their kind of duty to provide a quality playing surface?
Yeah, it is a frustration, a massive frustration. I think it's almost like every day there's a game on that pitch. It's not our stadium and we don't have control of that. You just would have thought, would they put the city's club first, or are they going to prioritise making money? I guess at the end of the day, they're a business and that's what they're going to do. But it was frustrating for sure. I think it hurt the way we wanted to play, and it was definitely a frustrating one for sure.
And are you able to have sort of conversations with them about VAR? Is it just purely that
kind of all in the agreement, isn't it? So you know they're allowed a certain number of games a week. I don't know, we can argue sometimes with them that maybe they've gone over that. But ultimately, in the long term, I just think we're going to need our own stadium, our own control. That's not anytime soon, I don't think. But, yeah, it's frustrating. Like, you got to the end of the year and I think we went to Rochdale and their pitch was like a carpet. And, you know, we went to Barnet, theirs was like that as well. And, you know, when we went to Rochdale and played the way we wanted to play, it was, you know, I think that was one of our best games. Mm. So I think all these things, you know, sort of went against us. And I think it's like this year again, you know, with the Women's World Cup, that I think it's 3 or 4 home games on, away games, sorry, on the trot. And it's just like, it's when are you going to help us or, you know, rather than...
Yeah. And my next question was about the sort of stadium as well, because I think you mentioned before how much of a game changer it would be. So it's not something that's it's something you're looking at long term, but it's not viable in the kind of short term.
Not in the next sort of 6 months, I doubt it. No, but at some point, 100%, I think we need either to take control of that stadium, or if we can't figure out a solution there, we're going to have to find a solution, because as the club grows, and hopefully, you know, you've started to see it grow, it's not going to be acceptable for us to not have our own stadium.
Yeah, I mean, it is growing. I mean, season ticket sales are absolutely incredible. I grew up in an era where we weren't far off being in the Championship, but we still only averaged 3,000 for a home game. We now have more season ticket holders than that. At what point do we need a bigger boat? Could the North Stand potentially be extended? Or again, is that something well out of your control?
Yeah, it's not. We'd have, you know, absolutely no control over the stadium. We get to use it however many days a year. We obviously have our office there. But yeah, I think you saw last year, towards the end of the year, the attendances were massive. And I think what lets us down in this division is sometimes some weak away attendances. I think if you were to go up a division and then, you know, even again, you're going to sell that out very, very quickly. And then at that point, it probably makes sense to expand. But that's not something on our plate right now.
No. I noticed last season that you went to Dubai, which I think was seeking sort of additional investment for the club. Did anything sort of significant come out of that trip?
No, it was just a good time.
Oh, it was just all day.
No, we went and had some chats, but nothing came from it.
Nothing came from it, okay. And I wanted to talk about some of the things off the pitch. I mean, the new kit, very popular again, and you are a very hands-on owner. So how involved are you in the sort of decision-making of designs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think it has to get sort of our sign-off, and he can... you know, Hummel puts in most of the work, and they present you with options, and you go, oh, I like that or I don't like that. You know, maybe we can tweak this. Can we not tweak that? So obviously Hummel does the majority of the work, but they give you, I don't know, 10 to 15 options, and you got to narrow it down and select what you want.
Yeah. And you were saying just before off air, the third kit you think is the best of the three?
Yeah, it's my favourite, I think. But it's like everyone's got their own opinion, right? Like some people have, you know, don't really like the away kit. Some people really like it. So it's a matter of opinion.
And it's been sort of a bit under the radar, but what sort of work has Clayton Donaldson been doing with the development squad then? And where is that sort of heading, or where do you see it heading?
So Clayton's been sort of a jack of all trades, been fantastic. It's hard. I think we obviously want to implement that. It's just about, I think we need to get out of this division before we really do it. Like, obviously, we've talked about it for a while now. It's just, yes, it's a difficult one while we're still down here. But Clayton's done a lot of really, really good work, sort of identifying some younger players. He works as a kind of link between the first team and the youth team. So I think making sure that they're doing the same sort of training, same sort of formation, same sort of style, just so that when there is someone in that U team who's going to come up and train with the first team, it's not very all foreign to them. He also can do work with the first team, I think his career was unbelievable. So you got a young striker like Stones or someone like that. Clayton can 100% do some one-on-one stuff with him and help improve his game. So he's been, yeah, really, really good.
Yeah, you're getting a lot of value out of him.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, and you always seem to attract engagement on social media, whether that's tweeting about Davis's Gucci wash bag,
yeah,
Oldham, too many to mention.
Yeah.
You seem to be keeping a bit of a lower profile at the minute. Are you bookmarking in the background? Where are you at with your social media stuff?
Listen, what can I say to Oldham? They beat us. They went up, so I can't really say much to them, can I? I in a weird way, going to miss them a little bit. I think it was a bit of fun, and it was nice to have a rivalry. So, yeah, until there's something that we can get over them, not really much for me to say. I think they're in the winner's seat right now. So, but you know, you get them in the long grass, and we'll see what happens at the end of this year, and maybe we'll reignite the feud.
Yeah, and I always think you're happy to have that sort of banter, aren't you, on social media? As long as it is just sat and doesn't go sort of too personal.
Yeah, I think it riles a lot of people up, and I don't really get it, to be honest. I don't understand how someone you don't know can get under your skin that much, but I do find it quite funny, yeah. And I'll tell you what, if we had beaten them, that would have been carnage. I would have gone right on around. So it's fair enough. Like I know they came for me, and I've seen a lot of it, and I even heard them chanting, which was funny. So yeah, listen, if you're going to give it, you've got to be able to take it. And you can, and I can't say anything right now because they're in League Two. They beat us, and we're down here. So,
and what's your targets sort of on and off the pitch this season? I know you said, you know, last year you said I always want progress. The National League is tough, and obviously last season we got 96 points. So progress is progress. Just realistically, promotion's the only target really for now.
Let's see what happens. I think it's tough to put that pressure on someone. It's a long season. Can happen, but I think that's where we're at now, isn't it? We're right there, and we should be, I think, favourites to go and do it. I don't know where the bookies have us or don't, but I think you've taken a team who got 96 points and played some really, really good stuff, and you've improved it with the additions of you know, Newbies and Kitchens and Banks and Palmers and Hiram and Brooks. So, while also sort of maintaining the core of that team, in theory, does that mean that we should get more than 96 points this year? I don't know. We'll see.
And in terms of sort of incomings and outgoings, what more is there to do before a ball's kicked?
You know, there's mainly will be mainly outgoings. I think there's some players where I think their race has been run. I think the standard's gone up, you know, like it did last year, and it's up to people to either climb to that standard or you know, maybe move on, or if they want to sit around, they can sit around and take part in training. But I think, it's about moving on now, and hopefully people want to go play football and don't want to just sit and do nothing. But, you know, you can't control that. And then incomings, yeah, I think we need probably a direct winger. And then we're probably there. I think we're pretty complete at that point.
Yeah. Okay. And what did you make of the fixture list? Are you just someone who thinks we've got to play them all? Doesn't really matter. Do you look forward to any particular games?
I guess not really this year as much as last year. I think there was, you know, I had a real dislike of Yeovil last year. It's kind of irrelevant to me now that the old, whatever his name was, has kicked the bucket and gone, taken his toys home. There's not really much left for me to dislike about them. Don't really like their manager, but irrelevant. Oldham, that was a good one. I liked them. It was a bit of fun. They're gone. So, no, I don't really have. And, you know,
need to find a new rivalry.
Yeah, I need
maybe
to find
Carlisle.
One. Yeah, no. Yeah, there's nothing. We haven't really crossed paths yet, so yeah. Maybe.
I didn't know if Mark Hughes had ever scored against Arsenal and you held
it. It might have. It would have been well before my time, so I would have been all right with it. But yeah, no, I don't know. I think you've got to play them all. So I'm obviously probably most looking forward to the first game because I just want to get going again and see how. Yeah, I'm looking forward to tonight as well, seeing how they look, because from what I've understood from speaking to the manager and speaking to Gary is that they're sort of, you know, shocked by how the standard has gone up. So yeah, I'm just really looking forward to watching them.
And do you sort of just finally have a message for the supporters?
Yeah, I just think they've been, you know, fantastic since we got here. I think they played a big part in the success last year. I think that, you know, the away support was absolutely phenomenal. The home support, you know, great too. I think they have a massive part to play. They just, you know, I think there will be a time this season probably where we slip and I think it's, you know, in an ideal world, people don't go to panic stations and start freaking out and think it's the end of the world. It's normal. It's a long, long season. We're going to have a slip up, I'm sure. But it's about, can you be positive in those moments and get behind the team and see them over the line? I think other things, you know, I know they freak out about the manager and about, you know, all sorts of things. I just think if there's something going on at the club, you know, the club will tell them. There's other than that, we're not going to always just respond to sort of rumours and things like that.
And a message for the supporters of Oldham?
Well, we'll see you on our way up and hopefully on their way down. And fair play to them. I will miss them a little bit, but hopefully we get them in the cup or something. That'd be so we can reignite it a little bit.
That would be tasty. As ever, I wish you the very best of luck. I always look forward to our annual interviews now, and I hope this time next year we're looking forward to a Football League fixture list coming out. So thank you.
Fingers crossed. Thank you very much for having me.
So I hope everyone enjoyed that interview. Massive thank you to Matt for giving up his time. Always really generous with it to York Hospital Radio. And always refreshingly honest as well and open about every question I ask him, which I feel lucky that we have an owner that is open like that. Like I mentioned at the start, you know, we are a charity. We do this for York Hospital Radio. They provide a service to patients in York Hospital. So if you are able to donate to us, it's justgiving.com/York Hospital Radio. All donations are really, really greatly received. Another way to really help us is to kind of leave us a review or a rating, preferably 5 stars if you're able to do that and you've enjoyed it. They really do help with the sort of algorithms and that sort of thing. Like and subscribe so you always kind of get a notification when a new episode drops. And speaking of which, our 14th series is literally ready to come out. And it's a series where I've done things a little bit differently. I've looked at kind of cult heroes of people that have played for the club. So the likes of Ian Blackstone, Gary Swan, who obviously scored our first ever goal at Wembley, Paul Stevenson, who played in the 90s as well, who has lots of great stories about Paul Gascoigne, which I'm sure people will enjoy. John Challoner as well, who you know, played such a key role in the 2012 side. So lots and lots of interviews that I'm sure York City supporters will really, really enjoy listening to. You can sponsor those episodes as well. I think there's 5 episodes for the new series. 3 of them have got sponsors, so there is a couple of gaps there. If people want to get in touch with me via social media, that would be great. For those of you that really do enjoy the Hospital Ball podcast, there is a spin-off to that as well called The Crux of It, which has got lots and lots of York City content on there, from live interviews at the York City Supporters Trust events, press conferences that Phil Bewers from York Hospital Radio attends. Most weeks, which is obviously different interviews to what you would hear elsewhere. And it also includes the kind of preview and review sort of shows that I do with the panel of Ben Robinson, Dave Hughes, Steve Ovenden, Jim Calverley, Mark Debenham. So per many free from that group, and we do have a good natter about all things York City. So again, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and do like and subscribe that stuff as well. So just finally, thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. I did try to get as many questions to Matt as I felt the supporters would want to hear. Apologies if there was something you wanted to ask him and I didn't quite cover it. But he is very open and honest. I'm sure if you see him around and about the ground, he would have a chat with you. So, yeah, thanks again. And hope people can join us for the new series.